Old Glens Falls. It's 8 o'clock.
Good morning. This is Northern Light for Thursday, April 25th. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe.
Environmental groups say they'll push the New York State Assembly to approve a key climate change bill before the session ends in June.
This is a scenario like many where it's hard to squarely blame it on one thing. However, there's documented evidence that National Fuel has been an outspoken opponent to this legislation.
A nonprofit SPCA in Clinton County has been stretched thin for the last 2 months, caring for almost 50 dogs seized in alleged animal cruelty case. In the meantime, they say they need to build a new facility to meet new state requirements.
There are 10 municipalities in this area that would not have dog control services, facility services, if we were unable to take them. If we could take maybe just a handful of dogs if we were to stay exactly the way we are.
And we'll talk with Wilmington Children's author Maxwell Eaton III about the process of writing and illustrating and the fun of getting letters from kids. He's joining us for a celebration of children's literature this Saturday morning at the Messina Public Library. That and more coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by Cronin's Golf Resort, a regional destination for golf, dining, and lodging in the Southern Adirondacks. Details at croninsgolfresort.com. And by Gray & Gray & Associates, CPAs, an accounting and financial services firm in Northern New York with offices in Canton, Potsdam, and Spring Hill, Florida. GrayCPAS.com.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe. Environmental groups are making a final push to lawmakers to pass a bill they say is key for the state to meet its climate protection goals. It was left out of the final state budget passed earlier this week. Karen DeWitt reports from Albany.
The measure would rescind what's known as the 100-foot rule that requires that utility ratepayers subsidize gas hookup installations within 100 feet of a home or business. It also would cap utility bills for low-income New Yorkers and make it easier for gas companies to help customers convert to energy-saving devices like heat pumps. Lisa Marshall of New Yorkers for Clean Power says the measure is key to meeting the state's Climate Protection Act goal of net zero emissions by 2050. But she says the New York State Assembly leadership prevented it from becoming part of the budget.
The Assembly is where climate bills go to die.
Liz Moran with Earth Justice agrees.
The Assembly ultimately didn't come to the table in good faith on this. And there's a disturbing trend we're seeing with the Assembly.
Moran says while the Assembly backed the initial Climate Protection Act in 2019, it has not approved bills that would help fulfill those goals. New York Heat is backed by Governor Kathy Hochul. It was approved several times in the state Senate. The bill has 76 sponsors in the Assembly, a majority of its 150 members. Marshall blames political donations by one utility company for the failure of the bill to win passage. National Fuel Gas Company, based in western New York, also extracts natural gas in Pennsylvania through hydrofracking. Fracking is banned in New York, but frack gas can be legally sold here. Other major New York-based utilities who sell both gas and electrically generated power support New York Heat.
We can't exactly say that correlation equals causation, but we can draw some inferences from that.
Moran says it's hard to prove that there's a relationship, but she says National Fuel Gas Company's opposition seems to be a factor.
This is a scenario like many where it's hard to squarely blame it on one thing. However, there's documented evidence that National Fuel has been an outspoken opponent to this legislation.
The group say they are not giving up on the measure and they'll push for it to be approved before the session ends in June. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, speaking Wednesday afternoon, says he has not ruled out passage of the measure in his house before the 2024 session ends.
There was an agreement between the government and the Senate Assembly that we'll keep talking and hopefully we can come to an agreement by the end of the session.
Moran says last year, June was marked by distinct signs of climate change, including record heat waves and smoke from Canadian wildfires. And she says that could happen again this year, right when assembly members are deciding whether to vote on the measure or not. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
The North Country's two congresswomen voted against sending $61 billion in aid to Ukraine in recent legislation. GOP Conference Chair Elise Stefanik was the only member of the Republican House leadership to vote against the aid. She told the Adirondack Daily Enterprise that she supports Ukraine's right to use lethal aid to defend itself. But she said, quote, she said she cannot support billions of U.S. taxpayer dollars of non-lethal aid while Joe Biden continues his failure to address his crisis at our southern border.
Fellow Republican Claudia Tenney represents much of Jefferson County, including Watertown. She said she also supports Ukraine, but wants to see a plan with a well-defined exit strategy. President Biden signed the Ukraine aid into law yesterday. It's part of a $95 billion package that also includes aid to Israel and Taiwan. An additional bill would ban TikTok if its Chinese parent company ByteDance doesn't sell it within a year. Stefanik and Tenney both voted in favor of the package's other components.
Authorities in Jefferson County seized more than a million smuggled cigarettes earlier this month. According to U.S. Customs and Border Protection, deputies and agents pulled over a vehicle on State Route 411 in Theresa on April 14th. That led to the discovery of more than 50 cardboard boxes full of loose cigarettes that were not made in the United States. CBP says they were valued at more than $336,000. Trafficking smuggled tobacco products is illegal under New York state and federal law. Border Patrol seized the cigarettes so they could be destroyed.
People who live or work near Fort Drum, near Watertown, may hear loud noises coming from the base starting tonight. Starting at 5 p.m., the U.S. Air Force will conduct training on Range 48. That's also known as the Adirondack Range. Fort Drum Public Affairs says multiple large munitions will be used. Community members, especially those near Range 48, can expect elevated noise levels.
And efforts are underway to carry the legacy of Harriet Tubman into the present in upstate New York. An organization called the Underground Railroad Consortium of New York State held an informational session in Rochester this week to release more details about a Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad corridor in New York. Tubman was born into slavery in Maryland and escaped, then helped bring other slaves to freedom. She later lived in Auburn in central New York. Karen Kuhl is a member of the consortium. She says that Tubman fought for what Tubman fought for is relevant today.
When we go from Albany across to Auburn, Geneva, Rochester, Lockport, Niagara Falls, and Buffalo, a lot of that follows the route of the Canalway. So there's a lot of additional outdoor product that you can enjoy. And the Canalway played an important role for freedom seekers.
Kuhl says the proposed corridor could include a variety of venues, including museums, hiking trails, and other spots where people could learn more about Harriet Tubman. She says it could boost economies and tourism.
She stood with the suffrage movements, demanding rights for women. Her story continues. Her struggle continues. Her fight for freedom continues. And her legacy is carried on by many individuals who they see her as the North Star, you know, trying to follow her examples and standing up for equal rights today.
Kuhl says the process for getting a state designation for the proposed Tubman Corridor is likely to take some time before there is final approval.
Thank you. listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. It's 8:10. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up in just a few minutes, a conversation with Wilmington author and illustrator Maxwell Eaton III. He's joining us for a celebration of children's literature Saturday morning at the Messina Public Library. And we sat down with him to talk about writing and the fun of getting drawings from young readers in the mail. That conversation coming up in just a few minutes here on Northern Light.
Music by Patricia Julian in Burlington. We have sunshine in the forecast today and tomorrow. Highs in the 40s, near 50 today, and highs 50s, near 60 tomorrow.
Back in February, the Clinton County Sheriff's Office seized almost 50 dogs from an animal shelter north of Plattsburgh. Police said that many of the dogs were found malnourished and injured. They arrested Hillary Davis, the owner of a canine gem in Beekmantown, on charges of forgery and animal cruelty. Her case is still making its way through the courts. Since then, most of the dogs have been living in an unused housing unit at the county jail, while some have gone to foster homes. But all of them are under the care of one small nonprofit SPCA. As Kara Chapman reports, it's a big lift to take care of these dogs and prepare them for adoption.
It's a sunny and breezy Saturday morning, and there's an unusual sight in the Clinton County Jail parking lot. People gather around a woman and a dog doing some tricks. The dog's name is Jack. He's got golden fur and floppy ears. He puts on a wide smile and goes around saying hi to everybody.
He's the best dog.
Oh, Jack.
Yeah. Jack is one of 15 dogs doing a meet and greet outside the jail today. They're part of the larger group of 49 dogs police seized from a canine gem in Beekmantown 2 months ago. The goal of today's event is to get them some time outside and around humans, maybe even some humans who will want to adopt them.
We've done adoption days forever, and this meet and greet is probably the best way we've ever shown dogs.
Mm-hmm. That's Lori Parsons, the board president for Elmore SPCA. That's the Peru-based nonprofit that's been caring for the dogs. Rebecca Moss-Patnode is Elmore's executive director. She says it's been a long, tough road to get here.
We're stretched super thin right now.
She says it was great that the sheriff's office had the jail unit ready to go to house most of the dogs. But her staff and volunteers have had to work long hours with limited days off to care for the animals at the jail and the main shelter in Peru. But Moss-Patnode says it feels like they're turning a corner.
We're finally starting to feel like we're in more of a maintenance mode instead of a kind of chaotic mode.
Adoptions are starting. The dog's health and conditions are improving. Staff are getting back to normal workflows and tasks. Moss-Patnode and Parsons say the community has been super supportive. At one point, their donations even overwhelmed the giving website. Parsons says that's another reason for the meet and greets.
We wanted them to be able to see the outcome of their donations and how it's impacted these animals.
Caring for animals like these dogs is what Elmore is all about. But this massive rescue forced the organization to put a big issue on the back burner. Back in 2022, New York State passed a law that lays out all sorts of new requirements for shelters and rescues. They cover staffing levels, training, and increased space. The measures need to be in effect by December 2025. Here's Parsons speaking at a Clinton County legislature meeting in February.
If we have just the shelter that we have right now, we do nothing, we will be closed by the state of New York.
She told the legislators that could have a huge impact in the county.
There are 10 municipalities in this area that would not have dog control services, facility services, if we were unable to take them. If we could take maybe just a handful of dogs if we were to stay exactly the way we are.
Parsons says Elmore will need a whole new facility to house dogs and hopes to renovate its current shelter for cats. All that work is expected to cost millions of dollars. She says Elmore can apply for some funding from the state and will also launch a capital campaign. Parsons says caring for the canine gem dogs has actually helped Elmore prepare for the state requirements. They had to manage two locations and got an idea of what they'll want in a new dog facility.
Just the space for the animals and the ability to clean the way we can there, we've learned so much.
Back at the meet and greet, Elmore employee Carrie Flora handles another dog named Zia. Zia's short and stocky, with a brindle coat and big, pointy ears. Flora's been fostering Zia, and she says she's come a long way. She used to have a hard time going outside and meeting new people. Now, in the sun outside the jail, she's looking around, curious, and letting people come up and pet her.
She just wants to be around people that she knows that she can trust.
People who can offer Zia a home. That's Elmore's goal for all its rescued animals. Kara Chapman, North Country Public Radio, Plattsburgh.
You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, a conversation on writing and illustrating and letters from young readers. Then stick around after the show for Bird Note coming up at 8:42. But first, Todd has a look at the weather for us.
Oh, you're going to want to get outside today and tomorrow. Sunshine, highs in the 40s, near 50 today. Light winds out of the north-northwest. Tomorrow, even nicer. No promises, but it is a forecast of sunshine and highs 50s near 60 on Friday. Light winds out of the south. Saturday, even milder. Highs in the 60s. Maybe an occasional shower on Saturday. Highs near 70 on Sunday. And highs in the 70s, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. Yes, even in some of the higher elevations of the Adirondacks and the Tug Hill. So enjoy this nice spring-like weather starting today. Warmer temperatures into the weekend and early next week. Right now in Canton, sunny, 31 degrees. So, Saturday, Monica and I are joining the Messina Public Library to celebrate National Library Week with a story hour for kids hosted by three North Country children's authors, Rebecca Donnelly, Jessica Laurel Kane, and Maxwell Eaton III. They'll read from their works and host crafts and character drawings for kids. We're airing conversations with each of the authors ahead of the story hour on Saturday morning.
And today we're hearing from Maxwell Eaton III. He grew up in Vermont and now lives in Wilmington. He publishes picture books for the littlest readers to graphic novels for later elementary school kids. He blends fiction and nonfiction in his 30-ish titles like The Truth About Dolphins, A Book Without a Porpoise, The Flying Beaver Brothers and the Mudslinging Moles, The Survival Scout series, and Bear Bill a House. These bright, bold animal friends are a big switch from the art Eaton made as a student at St. Lawrence University years back. He told me he used to produce dark, heavy charcoal drawings before being drawn to writing children's literature after college.
It reminded me of poetry a little bit, and sonnets and prose with heavy structure. And that's exactly how a picture book is. And the fun of it is figuring out how to make your story work with a beginning, a middle, an end, some character development, some tension, and squeeze it all in between these two covers. And that was the fun of it.
You write and illustrate. What's that process sort of like, the back and forth and the between the...
Yeah, that's interesting. I always start with a manuscript because I think you don't want to commit to your illustrations too quickly. I'll say that because you kind of, once you put something down on paper, it becomes a little too precious sometimes. And you might just have fallen in love with how you drew this character. So I like to keep it as loose as possible at the beginning. Then you can cut whatever you need to cut. Just get rid of it. So it starts with the words for me mainly. And I think what's important with picture books is to not say everything with the words, but is to leave something to the art also.
Early on in your career, that you started with picture books, and mm-hmm. and transitioned into these sort of graphic novels for elementary school kids, and you describe that sort of as being a liberating experience for you. Why was that?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I suppose a lot of the things I did. I was just speaking about loving the format and the structure of it. Once in a while, it's good to shake all that off and just have fun and go nuts. You can just waste 6 pages on a joke, you know, that has nothing to do with the plot. It's just funny or fun. But what I've discovered as I've gone back and forth now a few times between picture books and graphic novels, is I really like to switch back and forth. One of them becomes an outlet, and then I almost get sick of the freedom and just being able to have as many pages as I want. And I think, oh, wouldn't it be nice to just do 32 pages and to really focus on them and make it this tight little wonderful book. And then sure enough, by the end of that, I just want to stretch my legs again and do something else. So the back and forth is really helpful rather than being confined to just picture books or just graphic novels or just one age group. Because that's the other thing. I'm always discovering, you know, God, I love third graders and they're so great. And I love writing for them. And it's an age where they can sort of, or the 8 to 12 age group where they are selecting the books and it's up to them what they like and what they find funny and what they're going to check out again and again at the library. Or maybe have a little bit of ownership over, you know, what they might pick out at the bookstore. You're just kind of rediscovering things, whether it's your audience or the format, over and over again.
Well, and when you're writing, are you also thinking of parents, too, and writing for parents?
Yeah, that's good. I really try not to. It used to be easier not to before I had children and thought, I now think as a parent, but I try to put that out of my head and have the reader, you know, in mind. I think when you're doing it right, an adult might be reading a picture book to a child, thinking it's for that child, but hopefully getting a little something out of it too. Maybe just a little reminder. I'm not big on books with morals or messages or anything too didactic. But I think there's a gentleness that I hope transfers to the person, to the adult who might be reading it too.
What are you working on right now?
Oh gosh. So I'm just finishing up the third book in my Survival Scout series, which is Survival Scout Lost at Sea, about a kiddo who is cursed with the most incompetent adult brother in the world, who for some reason her parents trust her with over and over again. She's on the coast in Maine, out sailing with her brother, who decides he wants to go swimming with porpoises and just jumps overboard, leaving her out of sight of land. And she needs to figure out how to sail, how to navigate, how to use this GPS, which just has numbers on it, and read a chart and all kinds of scary things, but it's all light and fun. She's got a talking skunk making sarcastic comments with her the entire time. So just wrapping that up right now.
You'll do these different series and have developed such wonderful characters and you know, pairs of friends. And I wondered if Max and his pig friend Pinky, or if the Flying Beaver Brothers were going to make another appearance.
Oh my God. I get emails all the time from kids asking for when the next Flying Beaver Brothers book is going to come out. I would love nothing more than to write another one of those, but I'm not sure that's in the cards either.
Oh, man. What's that like, getting emails from kids? That must be so sweet to get to write with them like that.
It's wonderful. I love hearing that they've connected with something funny in the book, or there's a character that's their favorite, especially when I get when I get real mail, having drawings of the characters is always a lot of fun. But I also love their how frank they are, like what they didn't like in a book or what the book should have been called. I always appreciate that. It just cracks me up when somebody writes, when a child writes just a scathing review to me of one of my books. Thank you for taking the time to do that. And it shows that, God, they really read it and they really thought about it. And it's wonderful. So it always makes me laugh, though.
Maxwell Eaton is eager to hear what you and your kids think of his books, too. You can meet him at a story hour at the Messina Public Library this Saturday morning. He and North Country Children's Book authors Rebecca Donnelly and Jessica Laurel Kane will each read from their books and host activities for kids. It's free and open for anyone. They cannot wait to meet you. Head to the Messina Public Library this Saturday morning from 10 to noon.
Some fun music. The group is called Animal Crackers out of Potsdam, and it's 26 minutes past 8.
You're listening to Northern Light right here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Monica Sandresky here with Todd Moe. We want to take a look at some of the community calendar events coming up, including tonight at the Downtown Artist Cellar in Malone. It's called Moving Stills, an art, film, and poetry event. This is a collaborative project using the short films of local filmmaker Michael Hart, and it'll feature poetry by North Country poets Tyler Barton, Isabel Bowl, Jim Borey, Sylvia Carmen, Erica Kelso, and NCPR's Ethan Shanty, too. It's free. Refreshments are served. That's this evening from 7 to 8:30 at the Downtown Artist Cellar in Malone. You can find out more at downtownartistcellar.com.
So here's an idea. After you spend a couple of hours with us at the Messina Public Library on Saturday morning, head over to Tawny, Traditional Arts in Upstate New York, Saturday afternoon for a community jam and sing. It starts at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Dan Duggan and Peggy Lynn will be hosting it. They say, bring an acoustic instrument and your voice, and or your voice, I guess, and join them for an afternoon of tunes and songs. Dan and Peggy say, come join us for an afternoon of music making guaranteed to lift your spirit. That's coming Saturday, 1 o'clock, starting at 1 at Tawny in downtown Canton.
The Laurentian chapter of the Adirondack Mountain Club is getting ready for hiking season coming up. Join them May 25th for an all-day event hiking at Coney Mountain. It's a collaboration between the Adirondack Mountain Club and Pride Outside. It's an open rocky summit with great views of the lake. It's one of my favorite sort of mini mountains to get to climb. It's part of the Tupper Lake Triad Challenge. It's about 2.2 miles. You can contact Marianne Hebert for more information or head to adklaurentian.org.
So we'd love you to share your work stories with us. Join our North Country at Work team coming up next Wednesday, May 1st, at the Indian Lake Public Library from noon to 5. Our team is collecting stories about work from teaching to logging, everything in between. So come and tell us your work story. That's next Wednesday, May 1st, from noon to 5 at the Indian Lake Public Library. I guess that's it for Northern Light.
I think so. You can tell by the music. Morning Edition continues in just a minute. Then after that, it's the Marketplace Morning Report coming up between 8:51 and 9 o'clock, where you'll get caught up on all your morning's business news. And then join us later this evening for Global Village between 8 and 9 o'clock. We'll hear from the Soweto Choir and the South African Voices Special. In conjunction with the April Vox Humana feature, a special program in the Global Village featuring a conversation with two members of the acclaimed South African vocal group, along with music from the ensemble. They'll also highlight some other great South African voices, including Lady Spliff, Black Mambazo, and Miriam Makeba. That's this evening on Global Village between 8 and 9 o'clock here on NCPR. I'm Monica Sandreski with Todd Moe. Be well.